As the purchase closed, one of Teodorin's Los Angeles attorneys contacted Paul Finestone of the Finestone Insurance Agency, seeking to buy a policy for the Malibu estate and 32 cars that would be housed there. Nagler explained that a number of American insurance companies had so far refused to sell Teodorin Insurance. He asked Finestone to find a company willing to do business with the Obiang family. When one insurer asked why Teodorin intended to employ armed security guards at his Malibu home, Finestone explained that his client was an investor and collector who was independently wealthy and needed guards to protect against kidnapping. American International Group, Incorporated, which would gain notoriety of its own for its role in the 2008 global financial crisis, refused to sell to Teodorin after learning about his background. Finestone wrote to AIG to challenge the insurer's decision. Equatorial Guinea, he wrote, is a major supplier of oil to America and a critical interest of American energy needs. President Obiang, Teodorin's father, is no better and no worse than the Saudi royal family. We insure billions and billions of dollars of Saudi property bought with our oil money here in America, and AIG has no problem handling a great deal of that business. America's oil dependency required even Los Angeles insurance brokers to consider the relative virtues of corrupted oil alliances. Several weeks after President Obama's inauguration, the United States received intelligence reporting from Nigeria that some sort of an attack was being planned on high-level targets in Equatorial Guinea. Such reports were increasingly common. Piracy, oil smuggling, and speedboat militancy carried out mainly by armed Nigerians under the brand name of the Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta, MEND, continued to spread throughout the Gulf of Guinea. That winter, ExxonMobil's West African operations were on particularly high alert. In December, in Nigeria's Akwa Ibom state, armed gangs had shot up an ExxonMobil caravan, apparently seeking to kidnap expatriate workers. Nigerian security guards returned fire and repelled the attackers. A month later, the guards were in action again, around the same housing compound in Eket where the traumatic kidnapping of 2006 had occurred. Again, the ExxonMobil security force managed to ward off the assailants before they could reach any oil workers. Militants in speedboats also attacked an ExxonMobil oil platform in the ocean waters off Akwa Ibom. Malabo and its harbor lay only 85 miles by boat from Eket, straight across the Bight of Biafra. For speedboat-equipped militants and robbers, it was an easy commute. In Equatorial Guinea, ExxonMobil, Marathon, and Hess had developed an email system to distribute warnings about impending coups, invasions, or waterborne bank robberies in which armed men in speedboats arrived at Equatorial Guinea's coastal cities to rob banks and escape by sea. The oil company's security departments tended toward caution and often ordered lockdowns at their Malabo and mainland compounds on receipt of even fragmentary intelligence reports. The United States continually earned credit with President Obiang, and partially compensated for the harping it made Obiang endure about human rights, by sharing warnings about invasions or coups. Typically, Obiang reacted to the warnings by erecting checkpoints around the capital, detaining foreigners, and otherwise tightening his already heavy police deployments. These visible precautions taken after American intelligence warnings likely prevented some of the threatened attacks from going forward as planned. There was a boy-who-cried-wolf problem inherent in the repeated warnings and preemptions, however, particularly because there had been no serious coup-making attack on Obiang beyond the plotting stage in several years. In the darkness of February 17, 2009, speedboats bearing armed men arrived in Malabo. Three boats entered the harbor. Three others arrived on the eastern side of an adjoining peninsula. The attackers disembarked, unopposed, and headed toward the presidential palace, where, as it happened, the president was not home. When Washington passed on its latest round of attack or coup warnings, President Obiang had quietly slipped out of Malabo to his better-fortified palace on the African mainland. The Israeli trainers had planned for this moment. Their Equatorial Guinean charges were supposed to swarm in and counterattack to protect the palace and repel the invaders. In the end, the response was more ad hoc than the Israelis would have hoped. Senior ministers and generals who were supposed to lead the counterattack failed to turn up when the shooting started. Several younger officers did respond, however, and they fired vigorously, killing at least one raider, arresting others, and, after a 2-hour gun battle, chasing the remainder of the group back to sea in their speedboats. One of the younger Ecuadoguineans who defended the presidential palace that night took a bullet in hand. A few days later, as calm returned, President Obiang celebrated the soldier in public as a national hero. Obiang appointed a businessman to accompany the wounded hero to New York to seek out the finest American surgeons available to repair the soldier's hand. Lacking American health insurance cards, Obiang provided the soldier's businessman escort with $125,000 in cash to pay for medical expenses. At John F. Kennedy International Airport in New York, however, U.S. Customs officers discovered the cash in the businessman's luggage. The money had not been properly declared, and the businessman was arrested on money laundering charges. After some confusion and delay, the case was eventually cleared up. The raiders, it turned out, had been Nigerian militants who had ties to a section of Obiang's exiled political opposition in Spain, and who had been trying to sell protection services to sections of Equatorial Guinea's government. The militants did not feel that their offer of protection was being taken seriously enough, so they had decided to mount a demonstration project in Malabo to show that their services were indeed required if ExxonMobil and the other oil companies wanted to operate in security. What the attackers might have done if they had penetrated the presidential palace and found Obiang at home was not clear.